Our next speaker comes from the other side of the continent. Again, Ghana, with the image of the great leader Kwame Nkrumah, is similar to some extent to Kenya, and the figure of Jomo Kenyatta that was revered by people who identified him with that great people's struggle that was called the Mau Mau, the forest fighters of Kenya. Well, today, just as the United Revolutionary Front is upholding the legacy of Kwame Nkrumah, so there are sisters and brothers in Kenya who are holding up the legacy of the Mau Mau. Inside Kenya, there is an organization, an underground, necessarily underground organization called Mwa Kenya. And they have, outside of Kenya, an organization in which revolutionaries from Kenya work called Umoja Kenya, the United Movement for Democracy in Kenya. And tonight, representing Umoja Kenya, let me welcome a brother we've known and struggled with for a long time, known to many of you, brother, comrade, Maina Wa Kenyati.
I decided to come to this gathering because of one thing, that Malcolm X, for me, represent what we want to be. He represent our people. His ideas are still alive, and his ideas, we're still debating them, whether was he right, or what would he do if suppose he comes dead tomorrow or today? What answer can he give to us? And that's what I came to be part of this, to be part of what actually is good for us. I want to say two things before I go to the major topic. In October 1964, Malcolm was in Kenya seeking for Pan-African support for the struggle of our people in this country. The government of Kenya, under Kenyatta's leadership, refused to meet him after the American ambassador in Nairobi put pressure on Kenyatta. He did not see Kenyatta. He was not received. In 1975 to 1982, I was teaching at the University of Nairobi. I was teaching a course on African-American history course. Officially, I was told by the government of Kenya that I should not use Malcolm X's books. They are dangerous. Some problem with the students. Students might go on a riot. I try to tell you this because when I discuss the history of Kenya, you can see what kind of government we received, what kind of leadership which took over our country. But another thing, there's one more thing. Today, in the streets of Nairobi, and today in Kenya, Malcolm X books are read, and Malcolm books are so popular with the youth. And if anything else, he's the most popular leader in Africa, in Kenya particularly. And if you go to Nairobi, the only thing you ask, do you know, did you meet Malcolm X when he was alive? And the other person actually was Dr. King, which most people still discussing his ideas, whether his idea was right, whether it was wrong. That's one of the things I say, two things I want to say. The second one is that I was part of the Black Power movement in this country. I took part in creating the what we know today, the Black Study Department. I was one of the students who actually went straight to demand that African people should have their own history, should have their own department. He was there. The only thing I want to say here, that I was basically helped a lot by the courage of the black student, that for them to stand up, to say no, that we are not going to the war in Vietnam, and for them actually to leave college, to go to Mississippi, for me was a great thing. To go to people, to help people, those are what I call commitment. And I left this country with that fire. I'm going home. I'm going to make my own contribution. And I'm not going to take shit from anybody. I say this. I went. And I didn't know what was going to happen. I took a job. I was teaching at the University of Nairobi. I was a professor there. And I continued basically teaching. There was a teaching here when I was here. In 1982, the government came to my home and say I was teaching wrong ideas. I was against the government of Kenya. I was trying to organize the student to overthrow the government of Kenya, and that I was a communist. I was chained and taken to police station. When I went there, I was forced to take my clothes off, and I was chained to a chair for 3 days being questioned. Not because I had committed a crime against the state, because I said there was no independence in our country. Because I say that if we talk of black people, we should practice Pan-Africanism. Because I said the history of our country should be written, and written well. I spent 3 nights naked, chained, no food, no water. This is a government of black people. It was not South Africa. The president is black. The police were black, are black. Everything looks black to me, you know. The only thing you can see is not black, that is when you walk in the streets of Nairobi. You see Hilton. You see Intercontinental. You see other things which are foreign to our own country, and you see people speaking English instead of speaking Swahili. You wonder whether you are in London or New York or you are in Africa. This is the only thing you can see, you can tell that it isn't, yeah, it's not Africa. But in terms of the government, the ministers, the president, and everything else look black to us. But it has shown that it's not the color of skin which counts. It's the ideas. It's love for our people which counts more just skin color. So anyway, to make this short story, after 3 days I was detained for 6 years and a half. Detention means that imprisoned without trial. I was put in a small room for those 6 years. It's about 8 by 6, alone. There were nothing else in that room except 2 things. 2 blankets and a toilet bucket. And I spent my life, 6 years of my best life, in that small room. I did not break. I did not give up. I grew strong as the time went on. And by that time, of course, our people have taken the banner, have rejected the new colonial state, and there was straight fighting. When I came out in 1988. And basically, I was told by the government, clear cut, I was not going to get a job in my own country unless and until I write to the president of the country, apologize for my crimes, and imagine I spent 6 years in prison. Then I had to write to the president himself to actually to apologize for my crime, to denounce my, to renounce my political beliefs, and to support the dictator. I rejected that. Instead, I decided to leave the country. I didn't know where I was going, but Africa is so big. I walked from Nairobi to Tanzania, the neighboring state. The people speak the same language. When you walk or you don't see, you cannot tell whether I'm from Kenya or from Tanzania. We speak the same language. We look alike. And I went to the United Nations office, and I surrendered to them. I asked for protection, which I was given. And I was planning to stay in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, or to stay in a neighboring state in Africa, at least close to Kenya, close I could be able to monitor what was going on in Kenya. I was denied visa to stay in those countries. The government of Tanzania gave me 24 hours. This government is not near the government, the other government which is there, to leave the country. What do? I have to turn to the West, always. Went to American embassy. They were kind enough to give me a visa to come here, of course, to get me out from home, to come so far that I have no effect, basically, back home. And that's how I came here. And I'm here. I came in 1989. And then I come back to find out that the struggle continues, that I fight Abdul, continuous struggle, and I fight you again, debating the same ideas. But things have moved fast. That in Africa, the brother said, basically there was a lot of discussion in Africa today. What went wrong? What should we do? And this is the most important, even for us, to actually to revisit Malcolm X's books, to revisit Nkrumah's book, and in particular to revisit Kabbalah's book and Fanon, to see what actually went wrong, why. The thing that we thought we fought so hard, that the people we put in power turned against us, became dictator, and they committed more crime than actually the colonial regime. Those are the questions, you know. But let now come to the today's topic. I would like to begin with Pan-Africanism. And Pan-Africanism was supposed to be an ideology against colonialism and imperialism. It's supposed to be a force which can unite the black people at home and abroad. But today's Africa, Pan-Africanism had two sides. One side is what you call neo-colonial Pan-Africanism, which supports, this line supports the colonial regimes, and they've been used by imperialism to destroy African unity at home and abroad, basically to prevent the African people to support. It's supported by neo-colonial regime in Africa. Basically, it is people like Moi in Kenya, Mobutu in Zaire, and others, reactionary forces which support its Pan-African. They talk of the African unity. They talk of Pan-Africanism, but it is Pan-Africanism which actually will allow imperialism to exploit people. It's the same Pan-Africanism which actually will divide our people, that you cannot go to Africa and be welcome, that you cannot have dual citizenship in any of the African states. But they talk about that. So Pan-African is based on OAU. Pan-African is based on a new colonial state. The next Pan-Africanism, which actually Nkrumah tried to work it out, was actually what you call revolutionary Pan-Africanism, which is supported by the progressive African leaders or African people. It opposed neo-colonialism, it opposed imperialism in Africa, and it supports national liberation movement, and particularly in South Africa. And it called for a great unity of the African people here and back home. That's what you call Pan-Africanism. And then what went wrong? What was wrong? What happened? I make this very quick. I want to go to 1945 Pan-African Congress. It was organized by Du Bois. Again, it actually is our brothers who came again to unite the people of Africa, people from here. They are the one, they were the voice of independence by this time. It was Du Bois who actually brought the group together. And here, like brother says, where we see Kenyatta, we see Nkrumah coming as a student, and Du Bois as the chairman of the Pan-African movement. We connect after so many years of slavery and the colonialism. We met again. It was interesting. So our struggle became international. And it was during this period that Pan-Africanism gave Nkrumah, Kenyatta, agenda to go home. It has only one agenda. One, the people should go home and organize the masses against colonialism. It did not have an ideological program when people are going home, what are they going to use? You know, those kind of things they didn't have. People to go to 1945 Pan-African Congress. It was organized by Du Bois. Again, it actually is our brothers who came again to unite the people of Africa, people from here. They are the one, they were the voice of independence by this time. It was Du Bois who actually brought the group together. And here, like brother says, where we see Kenyatta, we see Nkrumah coming as a student, and Du Bois as the chairman of the Pan-African movement. We connect after so many years of slavery and the colonialism. We met again. It was interesting. So our struggle became international. And it was during this period that Pan-Africanism gave Nkrumah, Kenyatta, agenda to go home. It has only one agenda. One, the people should go home and organize the masses against colonialism. It did not have an ideological program when people are going home, what are they going to use? You know, those kind of things they didn't have. People, individuals, go home and try to set up their own program. And basically, this was the weakness of the Pan-Africanism of that period. It lacked a cohesive ideological programs. It was the major weakness. The only achievement, which was very important, is that it created what we know today, the African independent movement. And it was during this period, Pan-Africanism was taken home by Nkrumah and by Kenyatta. It was abroad. The boy gave to them. They took it as a tool, and they went home to organize independent movement. That's why I was saying the achievement, the most important achievement was to create independent movement. But because of this weakness, ideological weakness, African movement created three types of nationalism, or three groups. One, the groups which actually was supporting, they want independence, but actually they continue to support capitalism and imperialism in Africa. And openly actually rejected independence. And it is basically actually the people like Senghor and the rest of them actually would say that they want to incorporate it in French Empire. Basically this is what does. And others who actually openly supported capitalism. And this group opposed the unity of the African people, the unity of the African nation at home and abroad. The next group actually was created was a group which actually accepted independence within the colonial framework. This group felt, and Kenyatta is part of this, they felt this, that they could actually change the colonial state. But change it, but not change the economic aspect of the state, using colonial economy to change, to create an African state, basically leaving the colonial state intact, and basically to make it that way independent, and of course to support capitalism. The second one was actually the one Nkrumah used, that and the most progressive African people, that the position was that the colonial state had to be actually smashed and destroyed, that a new society based on African tradition and culture must be born. And that state must be based on socialism and must accommodate and accept that all African people, whether they are in the Caribbean or in the US, are part of the African continent, and that they should be, if they wish, come home and a given citizen. This is what it has been minority position. And the fact that brother from Ghana said that things are so bad, even to begin to talk about Pan-Africanism, it looked like a dream to us that we have another stage, that independence was fought, people were organized, and basically, again, they were betrayed. And we can even look at this place, even in this country too. that we fought so hard for in '60s. And that again we are back to ask ourselves, and that's why we are here. Why? What went wrong? Why do we have to go to Malcolm's idea? Why do we have got to read him again? Those are the questions. Even in Africa, it's the same question we're asking. So what happened to the African independent movement? It was that independence, that kind of Pan-Africa, was a compromise between the imperialist forces and the African leaders. Colonial machinery was left intact. Colonial civil servants were never removed. They continue to actually to head the African government. Colonial police was the same thing. Colonial culture, colonial judge, and all these were left intact. Symbols, which are very important, and the image, basically were left as a colonial images. Economy was actually neo-colonialism. What we are saying is that the economy was basically the people who dominated. Even today, the economy of the African continent are foreigners. And those people who dominate economy dominate the politics of the country, of the continent, and the culture of that country. And the education, both of these are dominated. So what led to us? A new colonial state. There's no democracy in a new colonial state. The regime is very oppressive. There are no freedom of speech, no basic freedom. Censorship is very tight, and the citizens are jailed, basically for speaking against that rose regime. And I just wanted to give that to come down, so I finish with this. On the Kenya question, in Kenya was situation was basically was a little different from other new colonial state, new other states. In Ghana, basically Nkrumah inherited the old colonial state, and his attempt to change it basically without no force at all. That the army of Ghana was was basically a colonial army. The civil servants basically were colonial civil servants. They attempted on Nkrumah to change that, actually overthrow him. It was powerful force. And basically it's what the British wanted. Give them the seat, but leave the force around him against him. In Kenya was a different that other than any other state except Algeria, Mozambique, Angola, and Guinea-Bissau, that we were the first people to take arms against British imperialism. And that's why Malcolm X all the time was reminding us we should think of the Mau Mau movement all the time. And he talked so much about the land, because Mau Mau were fighting for the land. And he talked so much about that. We took arms because the Kenya was marked like Rhodesia, like South Africa, to become a white state. And we changed all this because we took arms against. Quick, this is very quick. There has been a lot of mistake that if when we talk of the Mau Mau movement, we actually talk of Kenyatta, that Kenyatta actually is linked or connected with actually the struggle, the armed struggle in Kenya. Basically, it wasn't so. That Kenyatta opposed armed struggle. Kenyatta wanted actually what you call constitutional struggle, a cooperation between the African nationalists and the British imperialism. The young people said, no, the white men will never this country until we take arms. And basically they start organizing, went underground to organize the people against British imperialism. Kenyatta was not part. He opposed it. He in fact was arrested one time in 1952 by the Mau Mau forces, and he was warned If he continued opposing, they were going to kill him. He kept quiet. But the British thought he was actually organizing. When they started arresting people, Kenyatta was the first to be arrested. But the leadership of the movement was not arrested. So there were two levels. There were a level of school, pro-democracy movement above, and the other grounds, there were armed struggle, the Mau Mau movement. And it was that Mau Mau movement continued for 10 years. The leader of this movement was called Dedan Kimathi, a young man, 32 years old, has no other knowledge or anything, but actually he was able to organize. The problem with us, the struggle in Kenya was this. The movement did not have international base, and therefore it was not like Mozambique, like Algeria, where actually it has international support. We did not have. We could not get guns from Russia, from China, from other places. We have no connection at all. Like your brother say that, to study Mau Mau movement. And then you read books, which actually written by Mau, it's almost related the way the underground movement was organized. Underground on cells, and the thing which actually they did as guerrillas was almost actually what was happening in China. And those are ideas. And therefore, what I'm trying to say, ideas do not belong to one person. And ideas, the universal idea, our universal idea, are people's ideas. And after 10 years, after 10 years of struggle, basically, British was forced out of the country. And by December 1963, we gained our independence. But something happened after that. Kenyatta came back, compromised our independence, dissociated completely from the Mau Mau movement, and of course used the British army to attack the guerrilla in the forest. And what we get, like the brother from Morgan say again, it was a new colonial state. That it was a compromise between the British government and the Kenyatta's army. And therefore, as I finish, I want to say this, that what we have done because of that betrayal, we have decided to go back to read Mau Mau books, history. We have decided actually to go underground, to form underground movement, and of course to overthrow, if necessary by armed struggle, the regime which is there. And we have history, we have very good history. We are not going to turn back when it comes to that. And basically, this will be what you call the next stage of national struggle of Kenya. Thanks a lot for listening to me.